The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Greg Hughes, political editor of the Daily Mail, is with us, as is Gráinne Nié, who is a news reporter with PA Media. And Gráinne, I'll start with you in relation to the story of this Russian ship in Irish, in not in Irish territorial waters, but in the economic zone, being shadowed by Irish naval ships, as well as Norwegian naval ships, it seems, and British ships. The suggestion is that this is a vessel potentially designed for things like undersea sabotage.
Yeah, it's not often you see the name Vladimir Putin in the same sentence as County Louth, but that kind of, I think, is sums up the danger or the crux of it, that this ship that has mini submarines on board was kind of floating off the edge of the Irish coastline with the intention, it is thought, to check out vital sea cables. And this triggered a response from the UK. So it's not us being paranoid. The UK were like, what is going on here? Sent out a fleet of naval ships and planes to see what was going on. And this, I suppose, highlights the lack of Ireland's capability to even just monitor what is going on without even getting into responding to it.
Because there are quite a lot of undersea assets in Irish economic waters, whether it be gas pipelines, whether it be electricity interconnectors or fiber optic cables going to and from Europe and the US. There's quite a lot of valuable stuff in our water.
Yeah, and that we don't even know what is going on the edges of our own island is a problem. So, you know, this obviously flickers around the edge of neutrality and that we want to protect that, but we can't even see what's going on, you know, at the moment and properly monitor it. And I think that is, you know, with all the tech, multinational tech firms in the country, you'd think there would be an opportunity there to link that with capability to have monitoring of, you know, radar, for example, underwater.
Although it's handy to have quite a few ships and make sure that all of them are in operating condition crewable.
Let's start with step one for the first square on the playing board.
And this isn't, of course, chance, Craig, because we've seen Russian bombers being escorted out of Northern European airspace, I think by the RAF, was it, during the week. It's not by chance that the Russians are at this.
No, and of course, I guess it goes, so go back to Gráinne's point about us not being capable of monitoring our own territories. And this goes back to the secret agreement the Irish government has with the British government, where they kind of step in and say, all right, lads, we'll take over here and monitor, because, you know, a threat to Ireland is de facto a threat to the UK. So we saw that happen again here, and the RAF and the Royal Navy bolted into action and are also involved in kind of monitoring this situation until the ships eventually left. I did note that in the recent budget there was an increase in funding to purchase some additional kind of subsea monitoring technology. But, you know, it would seem, pardon the pun, be a drop in the ocean compared to what's needed.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, there's a piece in the Mail and the Irish Times today on this, and it said that the UK security forces believe it's sending a sort of a message to Britain regarding how vulnerable its infrastructure is. And you have to wonder about the timing of, you know, Donald Trump in the US and this pops up out on the coast, off the coast of County Louth near the Isle of Man. You know, the last time we saw this was a couple of years ago around the time of the war in Ukraine. And the timing is just a bit suspect, I think.
Remember talking years ago to one of the senior people in MI6 and about the, do you remember the Salisbury poisonings? And I asked, why would it be done in a way where it is so obviously a lie about the two of them going over to see the cathedral? And he said, that's the point. It is to show the weakness of your defences. And I assume the same must be the logic here, that you do it purely to point out that if we want to, we can.
Yeah, and the just that with the Navalny, the response to Alex Navalny, that also seems so obvious how they did it. But as you say, it's an international signal.
Yeah, I think with this as well, oftentimes they're testing the response time as well of their opposite numbers. So they want to see how quick it'll take the Irish, the UK ships or planes to scramble to intercept them, so they kind of have a barometer of where they're at.
None of it is positive, I wouldn't have thought. Let's move to something within the Irish Independent. Craig, there's a story an interview in the internet. The names have been changed by virtue of protecting the identity of the minor involved. But it is a year-ish, almost to the day, since the Parnell Square stabbing. And there's an interview done by Catherine Fegan with the mother of the little girl who was stabbed. And under the headline, "Little Girl We Knew Died That Day," says mum. It is a deeply harrowing read.
It is a very difficult read this morning. Myself and Gráinne are reading it before we came in. It's hard not to be shaken by it. It recounts the moments that, you know, the mother dropped her young daughter off to junior infants, went off to work, received a phone call that she needed to come to the school. And she recounts the moment where she gets there and she says, you know, "I remember seeing her shoes, her pink Barbie shoes, her Paw Patrol backpack." And, you know, and then that's that line that you spoke to earlier, that, you know, "The little girl when you died that day." And it recounts that, you know, that they had to bring her back to life. Her brain was deprived of oxygen for a long period of time. The impacts that has had on her, the long road to recovery, whatever recovery is going to look like. And it really is heartbreaking and unimaginable. And she speaks about the scenes that day out on Parnell Square. And, you know, while I think we all remember the Dublin riots and the impact of that, I mean, this is something that is kind of, you know, we mightn't think to every day compared to that. And it really is a really, really powerful interview. And, you know, you can't help but just want to give your thoughts to that family who are on a very, very difficult journey still.
And, I mean, definitively life-changing. The little girl, it was very close, and it says in it that it wasn't clear whether for the first few hours whether or not she was going to live. But the life that she will now have will be radically different than the one that she would have before this incident.
Yeah, I mean, it's well worth reading today. It is truly, truly harrowing interview. And, you know, fair play to the mother involved there for telling her story and sharing it with the nation this
morning. I think some of the details that get you are kind of the small ones. Like, for example, she said, "If someone told me this was going to happen to me and my daughter, I wouldn't have been strong enough." But she's like, "I have to." And I think for any of us who aren't in, you know, who don't deal with rehabilitation or anything like that, or hasn't touched our lives, it just feels, you know, it's such a strong thing for the mother to get into so many details about. And the contrast of her daughter, who she says loved Irish and had little trophies for how, speaking Irish, and now she's filling in a rehabilitation centre form and writing out whether she wants to prioritise speech or movement. Like that.
And the last line, I mean, the last line in it says, the mother quoted as saying, "I remember saying, bye, love you, see you later, be good, have fun, learn something. I watched her walk off and that was it." It's, you wonder how any parent is able to cope with it.
Yeah, it is brilliant. The way Catherine Fegan just lets the mother's words speak for themselves is brilliant. And Catherine is a brilliant journalist, as is evidenced by the piece. But I think just the depth of emotion, the honesty, and just how harrowing the situation is, and that we haven't really gotten into that side of it at all. It was overshadowed completely by,
of course, by the riots,
by the violence that followed. And for people who apparently were so concerned about the children and the little girl rioted that day, their actions completely overshadowed what happened to her.
That's right. And even when it's talked about now, if you say, well, when was the quotes Dublin riots, that is recalled, whereas the incident that was the catalyst for it has to some extent been swept off by virtue of that. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. To other news, it is obviously, a week and a half, Craig, is that right? You're
yes.
a political editor, yeah, you know all these things. Know. Has it been a blur?
If you could see Craig's face right now.
Is it me, or is it a relatively muted campaign? It doesn't feel like there is a whole load of vigour and excitement about it.
Well, I would say that it is certainly yet to ignite, both in terms of any sort of political controversy and also with the public's engagement on the issues. That could all change very, very quickly. One story that becomes a catalyst for something. Last time we had, you know, pensions, all the rest of it. And, you know, there's a few points that you know, in the coming weeks could turn it. And I guess I'm also looking towards the first leaders debate that we're going to have now. It's going to be 10 different people, which might not leave as much room for kind of jabbing.
Well, it won't leave room for anything. It'd be like watching underage football.
Yeah, but and so because you'll notice, say, from the two government parties, they haven't been going at Sinn Féin hard yet on their recent controversies. Expect that to come up. And so we've had this kind of this shadow boxing between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, which has been very tiresome. I think Sinn Féin have enjoyed it. And this might sound a bit germane, but as we look forward to the weather getting terrible next week, if this campaign doesn't ignite, well, then you're probably looking at voter turnout being an issue. And the reason we don't use local election results as a significant barometer for general election results is one of the key metrics is because turnout is usually much higher in a general election. If this doesn't ignite, well, then you could see those results probably aligning much more closely, which means very positive for the two government parties, very bad day for Sinn Féin, and positive for independence.
There have been a couple of stories that have sort of bubbled, and we'll get into some of the detail of the campaign after 10 o'clock. We're going to look at it as a specific separate thing. There hasn't been anything where there has been a really good scandal to get your teeth into in the middle of the election yet. There's a piece that Fionnán Sheehan has that offers up some prospect of a bit of excitement, which is Green Party's housing TD objecting to new homes overlooking his kitchen.
Yeah, that's Francis Noel Duffy, the husband of Green, former Green Party deputy leader, current Minister for Tourism and Media, Catherine Martin. I'm sure that Mr. Duffy's defence will be that the housing in question is in a strategic development zone, right? So when these are brought in under Owen Murphy's tenure as housing minister as a bid to fast track the planning process. So typically under planning, you would make an application to your local authority. People can make submissions to it then. If that is turned down if that is approved, you can then appeal it to An Bord Pleanála. But in the special in the SDZs, it goes straight to An Bord Pleanála. So your only recourse is to make an objection to An Bord Pleanála, right? So that's what's happened here. So, but in a way, he was kind of caught because he was stuck between not giving his views on the planning issue, or going straight to An Bord Pleanála. Politically naive, I would say. Especially when you have the government parties routinely.
Although that's a difficult way up. On the one hand, your political naivety. On the other hand, staring at a brick wall at your kitchen window for the rest of your life. You could see why you might take a flutter.
But the issue is here, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in particular have been at pains to criticise Sinn Féin for making submissions on planning at local authority level or similar to this. So that's why I think it's politically naive, because you can't have it both ways.
Is there enough in it for it to be politically damaging, or is it an entertaining flash in the pan for one weekend, do you think, Grainne?
I think housing objections are something that all the parties use as a kind of a battering rod to beat each other with, and they all do it. And I think the sniping comes down to what is the actual objection and whether that is a legitimate thing to object to housing in the middle of a housing crisis. So if there's...
Does it? Do people not just say, you can't, it's NIMBYism, tough luck, need housing,
example,
we all have to bite hard.
If you're objecting to a development because there's not enough social homes in it, left-wing parties would say, of course we are going to object to that. If you object to housing because it's built on what could be or will be floodplains or could flood in the future, then the Green Party are saying, obviously we don't think that's a good idea. And it's all relative then. So one of the claims from 2-3 years ago during the last general election, I think, was that Fianna Fáil accused Sinn Féin of objecting to 6,000 homes, I think, or whatever, in the Dublin region. And there was a fact check done, I think, by the Journal at the time that went into all individual of those claims and balanced out the merit of whether it was fair or not. And it is kind of subjective a lot of the time. Obviously, I'm not talking about this case, but I don't think it's a new thing, politicians objecting to.
And where did this end up? This went to the High Court then. Did the High Court uphold the planning or overturn it, or do we know where it landed up?
I lost that. I know he was involved in appealing it to An Bord Pleanála. I don't know if it was geoed or not.
Fionnán is saying 330 unit housing development was granted planning permission. The permission was subsequently overturned in the High Court, that's of course. And Fionnán Sheehan writing in detail there about that in the Irish Independent, if you want to read more about it. While we're talking politics, let's move across to US politics. The appointments of the US cabinet. Given, Craig, that you spend your time mired in Irish politics, it makes us look very good by comparison, doesn't it? Matt Gaetz as Attorney General, Robert F. Kennedy as Health Secretary.
I mean, it's one of those scenarios that you thought would never be possible to happen to educated to what you would think a democracy. Although I think looking at the last election and the interference by Elon Musk's Twitter, who is now, surprise, surprise, got a plum job in the administration, would make you question that.
Although it has to be said, if, when you go down, there's a, I have the full list of cabinet appointments, and the, I don't know, there's whatever, the 16 or 20 of them. So you get Attorney General Matt Gaetz, you get Health Secretary Robert Kennedy, you get Defence Secretary Peter Hegseth, and it goes down all the way down to the Department of Government Efficiency, which uniquely among all the appointments has two bosses instead of one for the Department of Efficiency.
Yeah, and I mean, Elon Musk's role as leading this Department of Government Efficiency, which, you know, coincides with the Dogecoin cryptocurrency name as well. But I mean, when you look at RFK, for example, I mean, to have someone in a role of public health who has been an anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist, you just wonder how far this can go, how devastating this can be for the US. Because I think last time when Donald Trump was in office, I mean, there was some, I guess, adults in the room. They've been all stripped away. And, you know, I think we're probably looking at the next 2 years of, it's depressing thinking about how far it can go. I mean, I was talking to a couple of American pals of mine who are just thinking about leaving the country. Pete Hegg said, I mean, like, what they're going to have to do to appoint him into that role as well is bypass a whole load of previous security checks. And that's not just for his role.
He's a Fox News host, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. He served in the military, but has never been in government. He is, like, you know, a Christian nationalist, has very repugnant views on women serving in the military as well, and as it would be really seen as your kind of poster boy for the far right ideological MAGA boys that you'd expect. So,
is there an argument to be said, though, Gráinne, that there may be some advantage in having people who are not necessarily the most competent in these roles, because it lessens their capacity to actually deliver on some of the more flamboyantly right wing policies that the Trump administration espouses?
We'll find out, I suppose. Like, a lot of this is untested, I think, is part of the problem when you're saying how far can this go. It, you know, part of the reason why it's a bit like Brexit, part of the reason why people have voted for this is because they're sick of the system as it was. And, you know, something like the Department for Government Efficiency is such a, I think, ambitious way of treating how government, when it's supposed to look after people, how do you make looking after people more efficient, is quite a...
But I suspect there's probably more than half of America who would argue that government's job is not to look after people. It is to look after foreign policy and get out of the people's way.
It could, yeah, and it could. I'm curious to see, right, okay, you voted for this now. What can you actually do about it? It's kind of like a social experiment or a governmental experiment with one of the most powerful countries in the world.
I guess as we look, like, the stock market has reacted very positively to it in the US. And I guess that's in the back of, like, say, a company like Nvidia, right, who are, you know, leading the way in AI development. I guess the reason their stocks are now going increasing up is because they're going, right, there's going to be no interference with us. No regulation.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, and at a time where, you know, we're on the frontier of, you know, with AI at the moment, we are in the Wild West of no regulation, you know, and companies are really trying to move forward rapidly to get everything done before that regulation comes in. So even you'll see, like, large language models like ChatGPT, they've taken the resources from everywhere. And now you have some companies, including the Mail, actually, who are trying to say that, you know, you can't take our content. But they've taken so much now before the regulation is there. So you have to think, if any plans they have, they're going to be trying to really push them through during this Trump administration before perhaps the next administration comes in and clamps down. Because, look, we all know that the threats from AI are considerable and need to be managed.
The other one, of course, that's an interesting one is Tulsi Gabbard, because she is in position now as Director of National Intelligence. And it is hard to see what in her CV qualifies her for a national intelligence position.
Yeah, and I like the previous analogy of this being the great experiment, and it'll actually be interesting to see how the Trump MAGA fans react to it, because these are all, you know, deep state conspiratorial people who think the state is against them. I wonder what their response will be now, having their own people, you know, behind the curtain, mm-hmm. pulling the strings.
But then also getting more of the same, for example, that report into Matt Gaetz is not going to be published now because he resigned just before he was nominated, and now that's not going to be released. So how different will these people who these voters thought are going to change things, how different will they be?
And this is an allegation, this is an ethics report into an allegation that Matt Gaetz was seen to be in flagrante with a minor. and he is now the nominee for the single most senior law officer in the States,
exactly.
That being Attorney General.
He's nominated for Attorney General. He resigned from Congress just before this report that he was being investigated for allegations of sexual misconduct and drug use. And now the Speaker Mike Johnson has said, I can't release that report.
And of course, when we talk drug use, Robert Kennedy himself, a 14-year heroin addict, felon, and by his own admission, is in possession of a dead brain worm that ate a chunk of his brain.
I wasn't aware of the dead brain worm.
It has a dead brain worm that ate part of his brain. Now, this is by, I haven't seen the medical records, but he said he had a worm in his brain that ate a bit of it and then died.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, he who also said, who was sceptical about vaccines, but also said he was going to defund drug research projects, which I just think is bizarre. And like the thing I was saying about America before is booming economy, businesses will be happy that Trump is in charge again, minimal regulation. But like America is a country where you have 2 weeks maternity leave, 11 days off a year, guns in schools, extortionate healthcare, extortionate costs to go to third level education. It is just not a country that cares about people.
I suppose the Republican counter argument to that is you also have great opportunity and you have lots of instances where individuals have dragged themselves up to the by their bootstraps to make it, and the job of the government is to get out of the way and to allow them to do it. I'm not sure whether or not that holds water, but I suspect that's their theory. One other thing, Craig, before we move on to your Night and Day Festival, which is coming back, and I have to mention big night last night for Katie Taylor.
Yes, she retained her world titles against Serrano.
In controversial circumstances, unusually for Katie, booed by the crowd.
Yeah, and I doubt the brain aid will mind that too much. She's leaving the ring victorious yet again at the young age of 38. Her opponents. Trainer was controversially criticizing her for allegedly leading with the head, which she said led to some of the cuts
and said it's not the first time she's done this. Serrano suggesting that happened in the previous fight as well.
Look, this is boxing. This happens, you know. And look, I think it's an amazing achievement for Katie Taylor to. I think everyone thought after the last one, okay, you know, you've proved it. You're past your best. You just went, hung on, hang up the gloves. She went again. Massive fight last night and what was actually, I think, from only seeing the highlights this morning, and a sham of an actual headline card.
Well, I was going to say that using the phrase "past your best," she was, of course, on the undercard for the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight, and there was a sort of a sense that he's fighting a YouTuber. He may be nudging 60 years of age, but he's still Mike Tyson. Turns out he's not still Mike Tyson.
I know. I mean, I was, you know, I obviously didn't stay up to watch it because I wanted to be fresh for your
thanks very much,
your
Greg.
Amazing
appreciate
show
it.
This morning, Anton, you know. But look, what do you say about it? But it was, there's a part of everyone that was like, look, Mike Tyson back in the ring, great. But from the commentary I saw on it this morning, it didn't seem to live up to the lofty expectations.
But this is about the fourth time this has happened, where we have had somebody, whether it be a Floyd Mayweather, whether it be a Vander Holyfield, whether it be Mike Tyson, they come out of retirement and there is a sense of, we will see this flaming comeback.
Yeah.
I think it's because there's no one of the stature of Mike Tyson maybe currently, and increasingly we're seeing fighters that are less of kind of these big beasts and they are instead loudmouths, and that is the draw, that you go to watch these people who are loudmouths get hit in the ring. And I was into boxing at one stage in my life. I kind of fallen out of it a little bit. It is a really impressive skill when as a kind of physical chess game, and how you change your movements and things like that, but that is not how, particularly in America, it is portrayed. It is a showmanship, a spectacle. You said this about me, I said this about you, WWE style.
Oh yeah, they're really milking the warm-ups of these fights now. I mean, the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson slap. And I mean, the Mayweather build-up to the McGregor fight just went on for years. I suspect part of it is because of Foreman's comeback. But Foreman came back when he was, 42? I mean, everybody thought he was an old man at the time, but he was early 40s. Mm. The big difference between being 58 and your 40s.
Well, as sport goes on, as you get older, you have athletes are able to stay in shape for longer and stay in the game for longer as well, because of new techniques and new approaches to staying fit and building muscle mass and things like that. And that is keeping people in the game for longer, because I think maybe a couple of decades ago, it wouldn't have been safe for someone approaching 60 to go into a ring with someone like Logan. Jake, they're interchangeable.
Although I suspect, I think Mike Tyson might have had a much riskier experience. Was he up against a better boxer? Because I'm not sure there's many people who would rate Jake Paul as a significant. Yeah, it takes a great win for KD. Would have been handy if we were able to watch. It seems like the Netflix servers couldn't cope constant buffering. And that seems to be the feedback everywhere, was that Netflix just got overwhelmed by trying to stream it all live. And somebody pointing out that Jake Paul wasn't even born when Mike Tyson was in his prime. Guys, thank you very much. Grainne EA, news reporter with PA Media, and Craig Hughes, political editor with the Irish Daily Mail.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.